Hello, and welcome to an episode of the Scotch Cast, the Gen Bomb Community Podcast. My name is Thurbleton. Joining me today is self-confessed cynic.
Hello!
Hey. And Mitch.
Hey, everyone.
This is for the week of June 27th, 2015. And we
deja
are...
Deja vu.
Yes.
Weird deja vu. We need to say that, like, we just did a podcast.
I'm not sure what the posting order is going to be. I just realized I opened this while on mic. Oh, well.
That's right.
Yeah, we've just been recording for the past, like, 2 hours with Durin, who had to bail. And I realize that people who have listened to this in order will have heard me say this again in the edit. But, you know, whatever.
Fuck it.
We are not going to talk about E3. I'm going to do my best to not talk about E3 this episode.
I don't need to talk about E3. I'm done. I'm happy that's in the past.
We want to talk about games, maybe talk about some news topics.
Yeah.
And just, just bust out video games. Video space games.
Don't know what order this is. I'm hoping the E3 one will get out first so people who are interested in E3 can hear Durin's and Mitch's thoughts on that before this.
Yeah.
But this is a normal Scotch cast.
Yes.
Yes.
And right. I'm just going to start off throwing to Mitch.
Yes.
Mitch, what have you been playing lately? How you been?
I've been okay. I've been really tired lately. I've been playing this game called Payday 2 until the wee hours of the morning.
Actually, before you get to that, only because I know I can bounce back with you on Payday.
Okay.
When asking you if you wanted to play Payday, you said you had 3 rounds to go in your tournament.
Oh, right.
And right. From what followed in that conversation, it sounded like you're talking about League of Legends, first off. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That's correct.
What is up with League in which they have tournament? Like, what is... What... Words.
Words.
I've
okay.
never seen, like... back when I used to play League, they didn't have a setup like that, and they must have made a massive change to their UI or something, but...
Uh-uh. So, what happened is I got involved... Sounds dark. So there's a community of people that run tournaments throughout the week. So you sign up, you enter into the tournament. Then there's a draft where captains will pick players, and then you are then in a team. And then there's a bracket, and then you go through a playoff system. And then at the end, you're rewarded with RP, which is like riot points, which cost money, and you buy skins and all sorts of things with that.
So is this run by Riot, or is it run by the community?
I guess itself? It's a community. I'm not 100% sure, because they just directly give you Riot points to your League of Legends account. So they must be partnered with Riot in some way, but I don't think it's Riot proper that does it.
Oh, that's like a really pretty advanced system for a community team to do.
Yeah, it was crazy. There was a bunch of teams and a bunch of different brackets, and it was cool. Hmm.
So this is your first time doing a tournament of that nature?
This was the day that we talked, that was my first the tournament that I had done.
Okay, so I guess as Cynic is set, first things first, did you win?
Did you win?
We got third place overall. So,
nice, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Out of three?
No. It was third. I think it was
no faith. Doubles has no faith in Mitch's ability.
I need to know what the basement is.
I think third place out of 16 or so.
Nice.
Okay, that's respectable. That's nice. Really good.
Yeah.
So. I'm not sure if it's diminished by the fact that it's drafted teams. I thought if a team of friends would kind of be more interesting. I mean,
there is a ranked teams. Like, you can form a ranked team of 5 people, and then you can have that team be ranked. But this was, just sort of... a bunch of randos. Actually, my friend was the captain of the team, and since I'm ranked lowly overall because of the position that I'm in, he was like, "You're pretty much like a ringer because nobody's going to draft you, but you're actually really good." And so he had me come in and play for him.
Did you end up doing any after your team was assigned? Were there any practice matches so you get to know each other, or was it just straight thrown into the wolves?
Straight into the wolves, which since I'm main support is kind of obnoxious because since I'm the only lane that has 2 people in it, you have to know how your AD carry plays, and so just being matched up with some rando can be frustrating. But luckily, the guy who was the AD carry and I talked a bunch beforehand, kind of compared champion pools, what kind of playstyle he liked, So we were able to talk. It wasn't just like cold straight into it. And the entire team was in team speak, and so we kind of formulated a strategy and a team comp around that.
I mean, to be fair, it's only because I've often played support as well. You not only have to know how your AD carry plays, but also how your jungler plays.
Yeah, yeah. Support is, you're not focused on the kills, you're focused on keeping people alive, and then you essentially have to know everything that's going on at all times.
Like, so you don't, I need to say, I thought I'd come here to do a Scotch cast, not a fucking legal.
Wow! Wow! After I sit and you and Durin talk for like 45 minutes about
Final Fantasy. No. With the Final Fantasy talk, let's be frank.
Two separate fair. Final Fantasy talks.
But Final Fantasy is like part Final of the Fantasy. DNA of Scotch
20 minutes later. More Final Fantasy for like 45 minutes.
Well, you know what, Cynic? This is getting a blood infusion of like people who might actually enjoy it. Yes.
Yeah, all right. No, yeah, it seems interesting. I've just been browsing Persona 4 wallpapers while you're talking about it. That's all right.
I understand.
I mean, to be fair, Cynic, all while you guys were talking about Final Fantasy, I was playing Dark Souls.
Yeah, I messaged Thurbleton. I was like, I feel like just playing Payday right now. While they're talking.
You guys keep going. Have your fun times. Have your talks.
No,
have your talks
about your okay. And for League talk, we have very little actually talking about League. I don't think we've mentioned a single character name.
That's true. It's
which
true.
Is perfect. Which is perfect. That's all I want.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not sure how I feel about having the webcams on, because this is yeah, hilarious. Anyway, Assistant Mabel says, Mitch, like, it almost sounds like this is, like, a group of 40-some-odd people doing just, like, an in-house scrim with prizes. Like, do you feel like you're going to be doing more tournaments with this crew? And, like, is it – will you be seeing familiar faces with these guys or, like, guys and gals?
Yes and no. The people that you play against, especially the captains, since the higher the elo, like, the higher the divisions, people know each other. And so you just recognize names and faces. The lower elo people, probably not as much. So
In and out. Sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of like bronzies will show up maybe for like one or two tournaments maybe, and then they'll be gone just because they're not very good, and so they'll won't have a good time, and they'll probably get yelled at, and they won't want to come back, kind of a thing. I guaranteed won't have the same team again just because teams are drafted fresh every tournament. But I mean, I definitely see myself going and doing more tournaments like this. I had a lot of fun doing it. So I like playing at kind of a higher level play, and so this is kind of what I enjoy.
Yeah, that sounds legit kind of cool. Sweet. So, yeah, Payday.
Payday.
When did you first get Payday? Did you get it for the summer sale, or?
I got it a long time ago, believe it or not. I grabbed it when it was on sale, and then my friend Eric and I played it, and it was like waiting the game is what it felt like. It was just progress bars the game. With a little bit of shooting.
Yeah.
And then the other day, you were like, oh, hey,
you have this game.
Do you want to play? I have got two other people, and we need a fourth.
I don't think play was the exact word I used.
You want to, like, do some criming, I think?
Yeah. Yeah, I asked if you want to do some crime. So, Cynic, how much do you know about Payday, I guess, to bring you in on this real quick?
I've only seen, like, there's a quick look of Payday up again this week. I watched that.
And, like, the quick look... Jeff does a good job of, like, he's not lying on any of the marks, but there is so much more to the game that he is just not aware of.
Well, yeah, Jeff doesn't like multiplayer games, for whatever, like, co-op games, specifically, for whatever reason. So I have a feeling that his like, vision of that game is kind of tainted by the fact that he sucks at playing with people. So, from your guys' perspective, who actually get involved in that side of things, how's Payday? What is Payday? What is your vision of Payday?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll bring it home in the end, but yeah, start off.
I mean, Payday is you have a group of four people, and if you don't have four people, it's fine. And you're doing random jobs. Like, one job is cooking meth. There's another job where you're stealing diamonds out of a store, or you're shooting people. It's just a bunch of fun. You have to work together as a team, both quietly and also if you go loud, you have to make sure you're not shooting civilians. And
this has been out for a while. Like even Payday 2, it's been out for a while. It's like the whole thing was like doing the proverbial heat heist with friends sounds like a great idea. But like to my memory, it didn't necessarily like take off when it first came out. But they've like done a lot to it since then. Is that how that's kind of gone?
Yeah, or... I feel it came out very close to GTA 5. So I feel like GTA 5 kind of ate its lunch because it was right. like this is the heist that GTA 5 doesn't have, more or less. Right.
Yeah, so, Payday the Heist, the original was 2011. The second one came out in August 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just right around the same time. I think GTA came out in September, if I remember correctly. And so it's like immediately got wiped away. But I don't know. There's just something about it, the repetitive, not even repetitive, but just like trying to overcome problems and working together in a way that is different than I feel like that happens in other games. I mean, The Division coming up looks kind of similar to Payday and the fact that you have a small team of people working together to accomplish a goal, but at the same time, it doesn't look like you can get a minigun in The Division.
See, and like, here's like the reason why I appreciate Payday, and I've talked about this previously on the podcast. How did the shooting feel to you?
Good. I mean, it took a little getting used to, but once I got it, it felt like I was actually kind of shooting a gun, if that makes sense, because you're not just like laser dead accurate every time, and it felt decent.
At the same time, like if you choose the right weapon, and especially with the first shot, like if you like you know
right
if you lay into a guy and don't let off the trigger, you're going to be inaccurate, but you it feels accurate.
Yeah, exactly.
That is what like that's what I like about Payday is at its core, if the stealth fails, if everything fails, it is a an acceptable first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. The AI could sometimes be terrible, but Jeff in the Quick Look didn't have to deal with Sam Fisher.
Oh, God. That is some of the freakiest moments of my life.
Sam Fisher. And then also, like, it kind of suffers from the same thing that Destiny does. Of at its base level, it's kind of bad. But once you start scaling up some of the difficulty, and you get these...
Right.
Okay, so there's a special person who's got the three lens night vision goggles, and he just – it's not that necessarily that he has great pathing because he has kind of lousy pathing. It's just he is 10 times faster than any of the other enemies, and so nice. He will just get right up on top of you, and then just he will one-shot you to the ground. He's kind of like a witch.
That's awesome.
And he also screams. He also like has a high-pitched scream like at you.
The audio is kind of terrifying as well.
All right. And, so they are going for the witch kind of angle. Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of. And he also just comes out of nowhere. Like, you'll be in a room, and he'll come out of an air duct and drop down in the room and just wreck you, and all of a sudden you're at screen. And he'll spin you around, kind of like Slender Man. So like
that's
you'll,
cool.
It's, whew.
It's terrifying. But he looks like Sam Fisher from Splinter Cell.
Now you're talking about language. So at higher difficulties... It gets more interesting, is what you're saying. They add more mechanics.
And also, it goes back to like what Mitch is going through right now is just like he is just doing basic shooting for the most part. And then I am teasing him a little bit of just like the high-end play of, well, after you're tired of shooting some of these levels, they have repeatability of you could try doing it stealth. And some missions can be done stealth only, some are loud only, and others are a mix between the two.
Right.
But it's... The enjoyable part is that it is for certain levels, they are great multi-person stealth missions. Like, you need multiple people to achieve your goals. And, like, the E3 demos of, like, when the jokey comms of, like, all right, well, you focus this guy, 3-2-1, go, like, execute. That kind of does happen in this game.
Yeah.
And, like, it is required.
Like, we had a mission where I was on cameras watching all the guards in the thing, telling Conrad when people are going in and out of doors, when to stop, when to go, who to shoot, kind of a thing.
And yeah, this was a three-man move also, like the first day of that heist, where we had a second guy who was looking where the cameras could not, on the roof, looking down, and then I would steal something and then chuck it up to him. And so it was like, yeah, everyone had a job to do. For some people, it wasn't the most, like, looking at cameras isn't the best thing, but it's an essential. It does a lot of things that, as of, at least, like, you know, right now, other games don't seem to be like showing off right now. Right. Just in a co-op nature, which makes it a lot of fun. Just like it's right. a really good game if you have even one other friend, and then you can pug the rest of it.
Right.
The other thing I'll talk about is how previously anybody who may have originally played it and then gotten their fill from it, especially with the way stealth is handled, they have drastically changed the way stealth works. I guess I'll say how it originally was, and then Mitch, do you think you want to talk about how it is now? The
sure.
differences? Okay. Originally, you had infinite body bags on you, assuming you got the upgrade, the talent to even have body bags to begin with. And that was basically when guards are on patrol or whatnot, they will notice a dead body. So you want to bag them up and hide the bag. You had four pagers you could call in. Basically, when you downed a guard, you had to answer his pager. You only had to do that one, take care of the pager. Yeah, I'm fine. Reporting in, yada, yada. And then, bag the body, hide it. And then also you had a neat thing where you could, with talents, make a guard, surrender and then tie him up. And then that was fine. With the changes, they've made it so it's less you take control of a scenario and more you have to constantly adapt to an ever-changing scenario because you no longer have the tools to take control of it completely. And I guess, yeah, Mitch, talk about, some of the stuff that changed.
So instead of having infinite body bags, you have a very finite number. And then every mission is kind of randomly generated, so it's not even that you can plan out, all right, there'll be a guard in this hallway, so I can take him down and do that. And I think that was the same. And then they also changed so you can only pager three guys, and then if you go for the fourth, you can either fail it, or then there's a guy that just randomly will show up to take that guy's place. And so it just kind of adds that extra level of you can't just rely on, well, we have four guys we can down and then a fifth we can surrender. You have to kind of – you have to work around it. You can't just go like, all right, we'll take out these guys and we'll be fine. You have to – can we just sneak around them? Can we just not kill this guy? So
yeah, it's much more reactive. And you got most of it right for being like new to the game. You can successfully get four pagers, but a guard shows up at the fourth. So that, killing the fourth guy is not worth it. It's a really good game.
That's all I'm saying. People should check it out, is what you're saying.
People should check it out. Also,
it's been out for a while, but it's something you should look into.
I mean, it's been out for a while, and they have been consistently putting out new maps and whatnot. It's all in the form of, for the most part, paid DLC. There's a couple maps that they've, pushed out for free.
I got some free stuff too.
But yeah, there's a lot of DLC for, it's a little bit higher than expensive, but really, it's just out of reach of I'd almost pay for that, but I'll wait until it's a Steam sale. And as far as I can tell, I think only the person hosting has to have the DLC for missions, and anybody else can join in. Mm-hmm. So it's a good model, if not they're trying to get their money's worth out of you. But they're not trying to cheat you.
Yeah,
it's a solid game.
I mean, my favorite is at the Hotline Miami crossover. Can dress up as people from Hotline Miami in the game. You can wear the rooster mask and stuff. And
yeah, and they're not afraid to do dumb stuff, like the fact that you can just play as Jacket, the character from Hotline Miami, or, and I don't know why, as evident in the quick look, you can play as John Wick.
Which I love.
Yeah,
I love that.
It's great.
It hurts me inside that most of the Dry Bone guys haven't seen John Wick yet. So
that is kind of sad. Yeah. Great movie.
Watch that movie. Watch Wonderful that fucking movie.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about game wise, Mitch?
Not particularly. Those were the two big ones. I mean, I've just been playing a ridiculous amount of Payday. I think the first night we played for 8 hours straight. It was absurd.
Crazy.
Yep. Cool.
I guess
speaking of talking, playing a game for 8 hours straight.
Let's get this over with, Cynic.
Oh boy.
Oh my god. 12 hours straight. I finally finished The Witcher 3.
Finished. Congrats. Well done. Done.
In the book. There's still stuff to do in that game, but I don't think I will go back and do it unless they add a shitload of more DLC, which they will, I guess.
So you got an 80% out of 100%?
Oh my god. Yeah, I've done every quest in my quest log. Which is a shitload of quests for anyone who's been to every landmass in Witcher 3 and gone to every single quest board. I've done every single one of those. I've collected all the Gwent cards.
Oh, God.
And beaten all the Gwent people, which is sick. That was actually a day in and of itself, like a full 12-hour day to do. And that fuck, Gwent in that game is sick. Like, I have to say, like, just far out, there's a quest line called, not Big City Players, it's like High Stakes Game or something like that. And it's designed so like you can fail the first two and beat the last two of the four people you play and still get through it. But if you try to beat those first two players, that's the best card game I've played in a video game like ever. Like it gets, like that AI... And their decks are so good. Because the thing about Gwent is there's only like 193 cards, right? And you start with like 50 or like 30 or whatever. And so it's actually pretty easy to collect all of them, especially if you do all the Gwent quests. And how it works is if for every person you play Gwent in, if you beat them, you get a random card from the cards you don't have yet. So there's literally it's easy to get all the cards in Gwent. You just have to beat every single blacksmith and merchant in the game, which I did. The thing is with that, though, because there's so few cards, everyone's decks are very similar. A lot of those cards are neutral cards that you can have in any deck. But what that means is there's like a limited amount of rule sets to play with, so there are optimum decks that you can have, especially like when you're versing specific like AIs. And they gave these two AIs some of the best decks you can have. Like there's these cards that are supposed to be unique cards, or the game treats them as unique cards, but they have all of them as well as you. So they have the Geralt card, they have the Ciri card, which are like incredibly powerful cards or whatever. So it got to the point where I had literally the best deck I could make from the cards I had, and I was still losing against these AIs like time and time and time again. I had to go back and like look at forums and shit as to like how to tactically make an even better deck. And it actually had to me go back and change the way I played Gwent to beat these AIs. And that's the level of like shit I had to go through to beat them. And
so it was just like the final boss is like Dark Link sort of thing.
Yeah. Like it was like one of those things where, those two people have these cards that you can't get yet because you win it from them specifically. And it got to the point where I was like, my favorite deck was just not good enough to beat this chick. Who's supposedly the hardest Gwent player in the game, named Sasha. And what I had to do was I ended up like scrapping my deck and making a deck just to beat hers using a card that negates the effect of the special card she has. And that's the only way I could beat her after like a good hour of trying to beat her. That was like stuff like that is just fantastic. And that's just Gwent. So I spent a day doing that. I spent like this Saturday, or sorry, Friday and Saturday, finally getting through the rest of the story quests and beating the game. And the amount of shit you can do in terms of like how much variability, like looking at the endings after I finish the game, it's one of those games that's so well crafted that when I beat the game, I felt like I got an ending for me. Like that was the ending I both like wanted to get and got because I put so much effort in and did all the shit on the side that I could. To the point where like there's like parts where like Persona 4 as fashion where Ciri like remembers shit that you did with her as you get closer to the end. So like stuff you did directly affects it. And then I looked into it, and there's, like, so many more endings you could have gotten. Like, there's, like, crazy shit that you can do with Ciri. Like, I don't want to spoil any of it, but, like, there's, like, stuff that happens with her that you can get. Or you can get, like, dumped by both your potential girlfriends and end up alone. Or, like, there's, like, so much shit you can get out of that game. But the ending I got was, like, perfect for, like, what I wanted out of it. So, like, this is, like knowing and again, like it got to the point where there's so much stuff you can do in that game that I got ridiculously overpowered. I actually turned it up to Death March, the highest difficulty of the game, for like the last 10 missions of the game. The combat system stays good because you up in Death March difficulty, you're doing like 1/5 of the damage you'd normally be doing. Like you start the game doing like 100 DPS. My character build left me with 2,200 DPS.
Jesus.
And So like I could, in on normal difficulty, I was literally running between things, one-shotting them. Whereas in Deathmatch, it would be like a legit fight the whole time. It was just fantastic. That is one of the best open world games I have ever played. Full stop. Up there with Skyrim, Morrowind. Like, and it made me question like why I like Bethesda games, because I can't point to a single part of The Witcher, and I'm playing this on PC, so I've got like the latest patch and stuff. I can't point to a single part of Witcher that I could have thought they'd do better. Aside from like, okay, they could have done more of this. They could have done more of X, but like the size of that game means like, well, they probably couldn't, because it's like how long they spent on it, how much money they had or whatever. This is like the culmination of that studio's efforts over the last many, many years. And it's just like, I can't, this could be like the perfect CD Projekt Red game. And I don't think they could have done better. And it's just incredible. I spent 68 hours on it, which is apparently a pretty quick turnaround for the amount of stuff I did in that game. A lot of people take 100 or plus hours to do what I did, mainly because I just got every fast travel point and made sure I used that as much as possible just to keep the game moving. That game's awesome. I love that. That was great. That massive props to CD Projekt. It's definitely going to be on the game of the year list. It's probably good. Sitting at number 2 if Persona 5 comes out, probably, if not number 1. Incredible. The opposite of that, talking about games that took you forever, games that take you about an hour to play. Have you guys played To the Moon?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So To the Moon is one of those games where I played a couple years ago, and it's like one of the games like made me bawl like a little baby. Like it was like one of the most emotionally affecting games I've ever seen or heard of. Like it's a game where it's like all like pixel art, like RPG Maker art style. Like it was made on an incredibly low budget, but like one dude and a couple others like helping him out. But it's like a game where you play these two people, and like Eternal Solitaire, The Spotless Mind, you go back in time. And so no, you don't go back in time. Your job as those two people is to change the memories of people.
Okay.
So like you're hired generally by like old people who want to change their memories of the past because like some like tragic event happened or something, and they're rich enough to be able to pay for this process. Mm. So the first game, To the Moon, is like you go to this old person's house, and he's dying, like he's on death's door, but he wants to die happy. So he wants his memories changed to make him believe that he went to the moon.
Oh wow.
So he joined NASA and like he went to the moon, and he wants to be able to remember all that. And to do that, to be able to change his memories to that effect, you have to like tie it to his like major moments of his life. So to do that, you end up going back in time, i.e. through his memories, to see his past and stuff. And you find out like why he wants to go to the moon. It turns out he doesn't want to go to the moon because he always wanted to be an astronaut and never made it. He actually has like a specific reason, and it's to do with like this woman that he loved who died and like all this other stuff. Like it is like easily one of the most emotionally affecting games I've ever played. Like crazy good. Okay. Better than any movie that I've watched in terms of emotional effectiveness. So that developer, the company's called Freebird Games, made another game as a prequel to the sequel of that.
okay.
So this is between To the Moon and their next game, which is called Finding Paradise, I think. And it's like it's not you know, it's not you playing as the two people who go back through people's memories. It's you playing as the subject of the next game as a child.
Interesting.
Random.
So it's called Bird Story. The Bird Story, and it's literally like an hour and a half long. Alex did a quick look of it last year, and he found it like incredible. I didn't play it because I need to be in that like mindset to want to play like a game that makes you cry, right? Like not something I do every Saturday. And I played it this weekend, and it's like an hour and a half long, and it's just about a boy who like nurses a bird back to health, and it is incredible. Like it's beautiful. Like they did it again. Like it's not as like good as To the Moon, but it's only like an hour long as opposed to 4 hours long, and it's like. It tells a beautiful little story without any like words at all. Like there's no like dialogue. There's no written word. There's nothing. It's just like it's you watching this character interact with his world, and you playing him to most of it, and just watching what happens. And it's just, it's great. You should play it. Like Bird Story. It's like $5 or whatever. Check it out. And then another story game.
I still want to play this. It's the one I think it is. Yep.
Yeah, Her Story. So what have you guys heard about Her Story? This is like the new big thing on Steam at the moment, apparently. But
I heard it's a game that you're not sure when you've completed it.
That's true. That is true. Anything else you guys have heard? Because I want to know what I'm coming into here.
I guess it's like by that same nature, every person's playthrough is potentially going to be different.
So like, Her Story.
Well,
is
I guess Mitch, have you heard anything about this game?
I have heard 100% of nothing.
Okay, so Her Story is a search engine game.
Okay. I think I know what this is. I heard about this, actually.
Yeah. That's bare basic level. All right. So building up from that, you are playing as a character in a police station, and you're looking through – it's a system from 1994 or like a modern system that's showing you stuff from 1994. I never quite figured that out. And like the whole thing is you're using a search engine and a database to get – video clips clipped from files, like interviews that are from a criminal case, a murder case. So the entire thing is like you boot the game and it's literally like a fucking Windows 95 interface.
Oh wow.
And with like CRT like lines on it and like reflections of like the room behind you and shit on the CRT, and you're literally using your mouse and dragging windows and closing and opening programs and shit. Like you can, the first thing I did when I opened it is like, there's two README files on the fucking desktop of this simulated Windows 95 interface. And I read those and I talked about like this grand like computer system and how computers are going to be so important going forward. And then there's like a recycling bin in that Windows 95 interface. So I opened the recycling bin and the recycling bin had a game in it. And I played that stupid video game, and it was like a Minesweeper-esque game or whatever, and I closed that and whatever. and then there's that main program, which is like, I forget the name of it, but it's like, it's literally just at the top is a search term, a history button that shows you what you've previously searched for, and that's important. And then a settings button, which is like, you can turn on and off that that screen reflection like thing, so it turns off the scan lines and turns off the description. I know why you do that because they look amazing. Like it really nails the CRT look, even though I was running it on my like monitor, but that might have been because I was running it like 2560 by 1440, so I couldn't see like the pixels. So like without pixels, having that like CRT line scan line look actually looks really sharp. I liked it. But then it's got like your search, which is a maximum of 5 things. You can only find 5 things no matter what like search entry you enter. And then a bottom, like the bottom is like your current session, which means everything you choose to have to store, you can store. So that's the gameplay loop. Essentially what you're doing is you're using searches to find video clips, and you find that because everything the interviewee says is
transcripted.
Yeah, transcripted. So essentially you're searching the transcript. So it starts with murder. So you enter in murder, hit enter. It brings up every video in the entire database that she says the word murder in.
Weird.
Is it even she said, or it's just a video in which the word murder was mentioned? Because I heard...
Well, she has to say it. Okay. The detective doesn't have a voice.
All right. I heard that there were some like clips in which there was just nobody on screen sort of thing.
No, but you can still hear her off in the distance. Okay. Like she's like, she's not on screen, but you can hear her from off screen.
Gotcha.
So everything you search for is actually said out loud. So say it's like, October. So you search the word October and it'll say like mentioned, 19 times showing you top 5 entries and you can't actually see the rest. So you have the rest of the 14 entries. The whole point of the game is you have to enter like more and more like complex search terms or like groups of words so you can get all the entries. There's 273 entries, I think, all about like 14 seconds to 2 minutes long or so. So you're trying to piece together this case by searching for entries which are interviews from this character and like just then using those to piece together like the story in your head.
Huh.
That's what this game is.
Cool.
It's actually, yeah, really cool. Like the only game I've ever played like this, it's like a totally unique thing. I've never like legit new genre. I've not played anything like this before. So it's cool. So the woman you're interviewing was interviewed 7 times. And they differentiate that by 2 factors. One is you can see the difference in dates on the timestamp because it's like a VHS-looking recording. So each interview is split up to like 50 different clips, which is really fucking annoying, but whatever. So you can see like the clip number in the top right-hand corner and then the timestamp at the bottom, which includes the date-time group, so you can see a date. But more interestingly enough, she's actually changing. So she has different clothes in each set of the interviews. So you can kind of like go, okay, this is the interview from this date. And you can kind of keep searching and finding clips with her and those clothes to see if you can piece together that interview, for example. So one way to play it, this is not the way I played it, but one way to play it is like you start like using the session bar at the bottom, grouping, like keeping on searching to find all her in the red dress. And you just keep like you keep searching and keep dropping them down into your session bar. And because again, you can only see 5 entries from your search bar, so you keep dropping down to session bar, which is infinite, and keep using that to group all the red shirt way of doing it.
Interesting.
So, what you end up doing and finding out is a really cool detective story. After all this like how it works, you actually end up finding a really cool story that's pretty okayly acted, and it was excellent. I encourage everyone to give it a shot. It's $5.60, I think. $6.60 or $5.04 on Steam.
Yeah. I think it was six something normally, but it's 15% off right now. I'll try and get this episode out like while the sale is still active. But
yeah,
it's like $5. You know what? It's cheaper than pizza.
Yeah, it's cheaper than pizza. It's also an iOS if you want to play on your iPad. I wouldn't recommend playing this on a phone because you have to type a lot, obviously, because you're typing in your search terms. And yeah, it's just incredibly good. Now that we have the interesting and positive out of the way, I needed to say the negative. I did not like this game. Yeah. Unlike most of the internet, I respect it. It's an excellent like concept. It's fucking nailed the execution of it. It was really good. Acting is pretty solid. And I had the same problem I had with this game as Gone Girl. Have you both seen Gone Girl, the Ben Affleck movie?
I have not.
Okay. Gone Girl is a award-winning Ben Affleck movie that came out like last year or the year before that. And it's about like this murder case where it's like this husband and you don't know if you've murdered his wife until like halfway through the movie or whatever. And then it kind of deals with the ramifications of that. It's a lot of people really love that shit. And if you like Gone Girl, you will love this game. Like it is like fantastic in its execution of its plot and obvious inevitable twist. I'm not going to say what the twist is, but from the moment you start, you know that there has to be one at some point because it's a crime fiction game. I didn't like it because I found the twist far. It's not predictable. I would never have predicted it, but it's too convenient.
Gotcha.
So from my point as a person who's actually read a shitload of crime fiction in the past, so this is probably colors my perspective and watched a shitload of crime fiction. Crime fiction is actually one of my favorite genres. Like my favorite series of books is The Dresden Files, which is a crime fiction series set in like a fantasy modern day. So like in terms of like Wade executes the twist, Wade executes the characters, how that twist boils back into the game and doesn't really make sense. Like it's like a Bioshock Infinite thing where in Bioshock Infinite, you finish that game, it has a massive twist, and you're like, oh shit, you play through that game again. You're like, whoa, there's so many times in this game where it like telegraphs that twist, but it was like so subtly and interestingly done that it really nails it. This does not do that.
Gotcha.
This is like, okay, you see the twist and you go back and it's like, well, I couldn't have told that. That wasn't really telegraphed. It's not really like interesting the way they did that. Like it's kind of convenient. That's my problem with it. That is my problem with her story. But again, this is a person who didn't enjoy Gone Girl. If you like the way that did the same thing, like that had a twist I called within the first 5 minutes of the movie and it happened and it was convenient and I didn't like it. If you like Gone Girl, then you will love this. It's the same kind of quality of storytelling, whether you like that or not.
And then as far as like the genre goes, like it's a lot similar lines of like, at least this is purely based off of the interview Austin Walker did with the developer, which people should check up, listen to on Giant Bomb Presents. But it sounds like if you're a fan of The Wire, you'll like that sort of like crime drama sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, modern day crime fiction. Like, did she murder this dude? Or like whatever. Like that that kind of idea is like really well executed. Best executed I've seen in the game. Again, for people who are wondering if they won't like it because I won't like it, I'm the type of person who really loves Ace Attorney.
Cynic doesn't like Pacific Rim.
Yeah, I don't like Pacific Rim. I'd like Phoenix Wright, and if you're talking about like twists, that game got twists, son. That game's got twists like, no, it turns out the bomb was under his chair the whole time. Like, just the stupid shit and awesome. Like, this isn't that, and that's the kind of stuff I like. So it's like the reason I don't like it might not be why you like it, not like it. So definitely try it out. Excellent, excellent like execution. And I hope there's more like this. I wouldn't mind there's a sequel to this either. Like a really cool, interesting thing that more people should play with. I love FMVs coming back in a big way. And yeah, I mean, you didn't say this. It's all full motion video. It's not like a video game this whole time. It's all like a woman actually talking into a camera.
That's cool.
And the last game I've been playing is a fighting game. Made by Arc System Works. So like the guys who made BlazBlue and Guilty Gear. I'm specifically being circumspect with this game. The thing I felt when I played this game, I'll reveal it in a second, is that holy shit, fighting games can be really complicated if they're not Street Fighter, and I don't know if I like that. Like the beauty of a Street Fighter game is like hold back, press forward, hit button, or like worst, hold back, press up, like hold back, up, down, press button. Like it's there's like not much in terms of execution going on, and there's not much like you have a super, a focus, you have strong, weak, air, then you have your throws, and then you have commands, right? There's not much in terms of like complicated things that are not character specific. So outside the character specific stuff, there's not much in terms of complicated shit you need to do in Street Fighter at all. Each like there's only a certain amount of moves. Arc System Works games are like, there's like a million things you can do. There's like four types of breakers, like mid combo breakers. Like there's a breaker that you can use to like knock them to the ground. There's a breaker you can use to like toss them across the screen. There's a breaker you use to knock them to the air, and they're all different button combinations. And you have to like remember that if you're blocking while doing this thing and then hit a breaker, it does a different thing than if you're not blocking while using the breaker. It's like so much shit is going on in Arc System Works games. And that is not even including character specific shit. And this is like 8, 12 characters in this game or whatever, and each of them has like entirely different ways of working, and like it's just like, whoa, I can bear, this is the only fighting game I've ever played that I turned it down to beginner to start. And I'm noting I've not played an Arc System Works game before, so it could be largely to do to that, but the reason I'm playing Persona 4 Arena
oh god
is the story. Persona 5 is coming out. I need to polish off the Persona 4 legacy before that happens.
Oh, God.
So I'm playing it on beginner for the story of this fighting game because, holy shit, it is incredibly well done. That's all I have to say. Yeah, that story is great. Like, if you want to be in Inaba talking to people from Persona 4 about Persona 4 ass shit, like, hey, we need to buy Yosuke a present because I'm coming to town. And, oh, God, his mom just burnt his nurse magazines. So do you want to buy him a nurse magazine? Stupid shit. It's great. I love it. I'm in love again. I just started playing that yesterday. I was like, oh, God, I'm going to spend like the next 60 hours playing this fighting game. And I don't like the way the fighting works. But fuck it. It's a Persona. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. That's it. That's it. That's all I have to say about that. So. That's what I've been playing this week. Nice. What you been up to, man?
It's the payday, of course.
Yep, the paydays.
The pays of the days. The main thing, okay, I'll quickly talk. During the summer sale, I ended up getting Grow Home. G-R-O-W Home, not Gone Home, not Gone Girl, not any of that stuff. Grow Home, which was, it's by like one of the teams at Ubisoft. It was a little passion project they did. But the main thing is, it is a rock climbing game. It is a climbing game in which you climb rocks as well as climb a plant. And it's very video gamey and very, like, you know, it's, very simple, like simplistic and silly and just artsy and fun and neat.
Mm.
But the coolest thing, and I think I've probably like talked about this before, like one of the things I'd love to see in a ocular VR game was a rock climbing game and using the triggers as like as hand inputs.
Yeah.
That is probably too far, like crazy a pipe dream, but someone else had a similar idea and in Grow Home, either the bump, like you can either use the bumpers or the triggers, but
yeah,
it right trigger is right hand, left trigger is left hand. And like they can do that because it's a simple game. There's no like,
yeah,
there's no gun physics or anything. But it's just a really fun game to just like climb around on. It almost makes you wish like there was, it was a like, well, better designed world or a richer world, I guess, better way to put it. Because right. Right now, like it is the Ubisoft joke of you're climbing it, like the whole game is climbing a giant tower in space.
Mm. I love the look of it. I love how it's like it's the whole idea is it's procedurally like his animations are procedural.
Yes.
Like the original thing for it was a tech demo they did internally, I think, and it was like, okay, can we do procedural animations? Because like obviously the pinnacle of animations nowadays is hand animated shit like Last of Us, which every single frame was done
artisanally crafted.
Yeah. This animations. Is like, hey, is procedural good enough to like get good? No is the answer to that question. No, but it looks great in a dumb way.
Yeah, it almost looks like Mr. Magoo-esque kind of stuff. Of like you end up like over walking and like fumbling around a lot, almost like you're drunk half the time. It's
beautiful.
I imagine if they reskin Jack Sparrow, it would probably work.
Yeah, you know what? Yes, he does kind of move.
That's kind of like what the walk to give a feel with walking in. But that being said, like it's.
Yeah.
You do have a lot of freedom of where you want to climb and where you want to place your hands if you can manage the controls.
And like the whole thing is like you're like growing these plants to get higher.
As far as I can tell, you need to get like a sample from the plant to your spaceship, I think.
Okay.
I think that's the premise. but yeah, okay. The story premise, I don't know, it's probably just
let's talk about the story of Grown.
But the gameplay is pretty fun. And like,
yeah.
I'm not sure if it's like $15 worth, but definitely add it on add it on wish list and pick it up when it's on sale because it's pretty dang good.
Man. Did you guys pick up anything during that Steam or GOG sale? By the way, like, I didn't actually pick up anything.
I picked up Grow Home. Nice. I also picked up a couple other games, but I haven't sunk any time into them yet. So, as well as some DLC for Payday 2, but you know that's crazy.
Cool.
DLC's on sale. The next game, the main game I want to talk about, is a game that people have been wanting me to play for a while. And I keep thinking, I kept just saying, no, I prefer the old version. Maybe it's becoming an old man. I just like the way it worked better. And I'm still kind of, like, now it feels like Strangers in a Strange Land, even though, like, I know everything.
You have you'd be so intrigued. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Counter-Strike Global Offensive.
Oh. So. All right, are you CS 1.5 man or 1.6 man? 1.4. Ooh, like how you can
all of them. I mean, like I first started pre-source. Back when Counter-Strike had vehicles, it was a great time. It was a silly time. My main time of Counter-Strike was getting into Source though. And, like in terms of like. I played 1.5, I played 1.6, I was still a kid then.
Right.
And then when Source hit, I like sunk a lot of hours just playing with friends. Mm-hmm. Not really a competitive scene, but just like you don't have to be competitive to know where the spots are that you want to shoot from and all that. And then there's just certain things about like Global Offensive that I didn't like. Chief among them that you couldn't do dumb sprays.
What do you mean? Like just like fucking
In the Source engine, in all the Source game, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure in TF2 you could do this too. You could just like upload a BMP, like just a paint image or a JPEG or just like anything to Steam and spray that on like in game. Right. And I realize a lot of people use this for like just to post porn or something.
Yeah, which is exactly what you want from this fucking
CS game. But no, but what you want is when you and your friends decide to all, like, change your usernames to be various Bond villains, and then you spray the dumbest image of that Bond villain, you can theme it. It. Like, it's great with friends. It's a really funny, like, silly thing. And got Counter-Strike Global Offensive had to put on, like, its grown-up pants, and they got rid of that. So that was the first thing I was like, man, I don't want...
Yeah.
I like doing the dumb fun. Yeah. The second thing is there's a little bit, like, there's... minute changes to the game on both the gameplay level and the map design level that there were curveballs to me and are still curveballs to me. I'm having fun playing the game, especially because like a lot of the not as old-timey gamers as me that I hang out with enjoy playing Counter-Strike Global Offensive and don't like playing Source. So it's nice to play with people.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, this is going to sound dumb, but in Source, you would crouch to get better accuracy. Like, there was no iron sights, like there isn't the Call of Duty or anything. Like, there's some guns that have, like, iron sights, but it's more like zooming in with the scope. So what you would do is you would just crouch for, like, a half of a second, and that would give you enough time to get a headshot and then move on. There's no crouch, like, you don't have to do that in Global Offensive. You just, you stand still. And it's little things like that that, like, throw curveballs at me. And that, like, I can still hold my own in most maps, but it's, and the other thing is, these maps that have been more or less the same from 1.4 to Source have slight changes in them that keep, like, I go to turn left to go down another route, and there's just a brick wall in the way.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's like, I get killed. That being said, the community on Counter-Strike, which I've mentioned this in the past while watching streams, it's a fun sort of trolliness of the internet. Of the, they're grown up and we're dicks to each other, but at the same time, we're not complete assholes and we don't cuss everyone out. Like, I don't know how to explain it.
It's not League of Legends.
Hey, now.
It's a different thing.
I was going more towards Call of Duty, but yeah, League of Legends definitely has a toxicity to it as well. Yeah. But I mean, like, they're trying their best to do better. It's been a while since I was in there, so I don't know if is it still that toxic, Mitch?
It's probably one of the most toxic communities that I've ever come across. But you know, that's what the mute button is for.
You should try Counter-Strike Global Offensive. It's not that bad.
Yeah. But it's not like a nice group of dudes. It's just like not as big an asshole as asshole in a good way.
There were a couple of times. Okay, so the main thing I like doing is competitive matches, which it's up to a 90-minute commitment, but basically you're doing, like, first team to 16 out of 30. And then from that, like, you need to, like, it's 5v5. It is the ranked play. It is the serious play. And, like, there are moments every now and then where people are like, oh, wait, we're not being dicks to each other. We're being nice. This is weird. And like,
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So it's a fun game.
It's still free, right? That's still...
No, Counter-Strike is one you have to pay money for.
Okay, Global Offensive you do have to pay money for.
Yes, and that's actually one of the biggest issues it has is whenever it goes on Steam sale, hackers will buy up tons of cheap copies of it, and then they'll use those, like, you know, the $3 accounts that they got the game from, and we'll use that to do some hacking on, and they don't care if they get banned on those accounts.
Oh, so I always thought CSGO was free. Like, how much is CSGO?
Let me look this up. Library.
Fact checking on a podcast.
Good times.
Woo.
Store page. Well, I'm looking this up. How do you usually go to find the price of something on Steam? It's $15, by the way.
I'd use the search. That's the only way. Like, it is that long process of finding the game and then entering the games.
Well, I truncate that by going through my library. If it's a game I have in my library, I'll search through there, click the game, and then click store page under links.
I do the same. $15?
$15, yeah.
All right. Yeah, okay. Does it still play well? Like, Noob said the physics felt different. All right. I don't know.
It's not Source physics. And I think this is in line with it. Okay. The shooting feels like Left 4 Dead 2 shooting. Like, the AK almost feels identical from the AK in Left 4 Dead 2.
That's all right. I didn't mind that. It wasn't the worst.
Yeah. And in terms of like popularity, it's ranked pretty like constantly on the top 10 right now. Looking at the Steam charts, it's second only to Dota 2.
Damn.
Which it's all got, right. It's got just under 200,000. Dota 2 has just under 500,000. Which brings me to the last game I want to talk about. This is kind of a PSA, but even if you hate MOBAs, you should consider downloading Dota 2.
Whoa!
And the reason
have this fight?
And you don't have to play any MOBAs. You could be a fan of League of Legends and hate Dota 2. You should still download Dota 2.
Because where's the angle here?
The angle here is that Valve recently announced that they're unveiling Dota Reborn. I think is the name of it. I'm not entirely sure, but you can get into the beta of it, or at least it's around the corner. And this is basically, I might have talked about this in the past. This is like the first unveiling of Source 2.0. The new operating system with like that Valve has, and they are kind of reverse engineering Warcraft 3 into Dota. They aren't actually putting Warcraft 3 assets and levels and all that into it, but the way Dota original Defense of the Ancients came out of the amazing level editor that Blizzard provided with Warcraft 3, and Aeons of Strafe, StarCraft 2. StarCraft 2 still had a really good level editor as well. They are doing that with Dota Uprising. If they are, it's got the Hammer editor and a lot of Lua stuff, but they put in a bunch of editing tools for this new engine that, people have already begun to make all sorts of games. And I've heard most of this from the Crate and Crowbar podcast, a bunch of British video game writers for Rock, Paper, Shotgun and whatnot. So I'm just quoting what they are talking about. But Bomberman's in there. I can't think of any of the games, but they are making it's like the little Big Planet of PC games.
Right.
And that is kind of a scary, awesome thought, because you have an engine where many people, Stanley Parable, Dear Esther, really good mods coming out of the Hammer editor and the Half-Life 2 engine, or the Source engine rather, and that is getting they're putting better tools to make games with this Dota 2, Dota Reborn engine. It's something I want to play around with. It's something I think a lot of people are actively playing around with and making cool stuff. And so you don't need to play a MOBA. You just need to download this free thing, Dota 2, and you can, I wouldn't be surprised if there's, some multiplayer game you can play with other people that is
cool.
That's not Dota related.
That's awesome.
There's going to be
Dota without the Dota? That's sick.
Sounds like the perfect amount of Dota.
Sure.
Well, I'm of the two, League of Legends and Dota, I'm a Dota fan. I was a person who hasn't played any of these games.
I feel like it's...
That's all right.
I know you can tell I'm excited about this, and you can probably tell I'm doing a really lousy job of conveying why it's that amazing.
It does sound cool.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing to think about. This is, for a lot of people, there's the Steam VR and the controller, and then the talk that Valve was wanting to do a Source 2 upgrade. And those are the two main things Valve has been working on. Both those things are coming to fruition soon. So they have to work on something else after this. And they have a new engine, and they have a new platform. So even if it's not Half-Life 3.
It's going to be Portal 3.
It's going to be new Valve games. And I would be okay if they didn't make a Half-Life 3. I just want them to make more cool games.
Yeah. I kind of do want a Portal 3, though. Speaking of the 3s, I kind of do want... I like how they're not every year. They're not annualized. They're when a Portal game comes, I'm happy to see it. So.
It comes when it comes, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a Vive game. You know it in your heart.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
Nah, that's going to be sick. I can't wait.
Is
that it before news? Another break before news, or is it...
Yeah, we got a little bit over an hour. 40 minutes. We'll take a quick break. back after a lovely break music, and we're going to talk about news topics, I guess?
Yay!
Yeah.
Ooh.
One would think that, like, right after E3, there wouldn't be a lot of news, but there's been a couple things. I think that we'll jump first into the one Cynic probably wants to talk about, with the release of a game right out of the gate of E3, the Batmoon?
The Batmans.
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 No.
It's pretty conspicuous that the week it comes out, none of us were talking about Batman for the What You've Been Played segment. I think that says a lot. Because, like, the first thing I heard about this, because this is a game where Justin McElroy, the great J-Mac, sadly associated with Polygon.com, gave it a 10 out of 10. Like, a full perfect score. He loved it. I really like, do you guys like the other Batman games?
Yes, from what I've played of them. I haven't played them a whole lot. I've just kind of picked it up and played it kind of in short bites. But
right.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
Like Arkham Asylum, Arkham City. Like, has anyone here finished those games at all? Because I didn't play Arkham City.
I have not.
Okay.
All right. So, like, we're not probably the best people to talk about this because we haven't played it ourselves.
Beautiful.
But, to give people a perspective back at home, I didn't play Arkham City because I didn't want an open world Batman game, so I didn't want this either. The interesting part of this is, so Rocksteady puts out Batman, runs better on PS4 than it does on PC, which is kind of fucked up in and of itself. PC version has a limit of 30 frames per second, which is kind of shit. Not what you come to PC for. Barely any options. You can't unlock that frame rate without doing an INI edit. There were names which suggested that Iron Galaxy Studios worked on the game for the port, but it doesn't actually say that they did, so people kind of jumped to conclusions there. But in general, PC version is broken, and they did the actual interesting thing to do with the story, and they actually stopped selling the PC version. They pulled it off the digital stores, and
I guess one should also say that this is the first game, first big title post Steam Okang Returns.
Exactly. They not only pulled it from the store, but suggested to users that they could actually get a refund from Steam.
Oh wow!
So, actually, big news. What do you guys thoughts? Like, what do you guys think this means for gaming? It actually does. It's actually an important event, weirdly enough.
It honestly, I mean, it's sucky, but it seems kind of to be the track record with games. I don't know why, but it's like, especially in this last year. Take it.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the last big snafu? Was Mortal Kombat, right? And it was like deleting people's games, and then it just every single launch seems to not fucking work.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Like, why do developers just ship broken shit? I mean, it almost seems like it'd be better to just delay the game and not ship a bad product. But at the same time, when they're up underneath the gun, I guess, forced to ship. I don't know.
Yeah. Derbs?
Wanting to be a game developer, I can like sort of relate a bit more closely to like why games ship broken, and like a lot of it is just like certain people, like no one is directly in control to fix. Like the person who like is saying, "Hey, this thing's broken. We need to like delay it," is not the person who has to answer to the board of advisors or trustees and whatnot, and. There are multiple people pulling it, like, pulling from different directions of why stuff needs to ship broken. As for the greater question of, is this, like, what, like, this feels like they're drawing a line in the sand for PC gaming compared to console gaming. Right. And whether or not, big developers are going to put forth the effort to make it so that they are working on day one, maybe go to some side option of embracing paid mod support and just letting the mod makers fix the problems, and PC gamers will have to pay double, double, but like pay extra.
That sounds like a bleak future.
That is definitely a bleak future. I look at the possibilities.
Right.
or just the third option of, like, hey, we're not working on PC ports now. And only on the console.
Whoa.
Jeez. That's an even darker future.
Yes, but from a business perspective, less chance of piracy from consoles. Less overhead in terms of, like, you only have to build for two different types of machines, an Xbox and a PS4, opposed to several different types of video cards, several different types of, processors and all that. PC gaming, like, there are headaches to PC gaming, especially for high-end graphics and whatnot. It's going to be interesting.
I want to unpack that, because it's as if people have forgotten what gaming was like 5 years ago, maybe even like less time than that. Like back in the day, the grand, like heady days of the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, PC ports were always terrible. PC ports were shit. Like the rise of the PC, sorry, the rise, then fall, then re-rise of the PC is a very documented fact. Like if you look at the 90s, PC was where it's at when it comes to PC games. Video games in general, sorry. Then came the PS2 era, and that's when consoles were like where you played your damn video games, except for like Max Payne and stuff, right? There would be a couple like heavy hitters on PC, like your Half-Life and your Max Payne, but most games were on console, and if you got a PC port, it was usually a shitty port, mainly because most people played games on the consoles. Then came the PS3 360 era, and that's when the tide started pulling back in the other direction. When the curve of how good games could look on a PC just got to the point where, and the amount of people who were willing to build a gaming PC got to the point where a lot of the community went back to the PC, and with that rise of PC like install base willing to buy games, not just pirate them, games started going back to the PC in a massive way. We had that great period of, like, say, 2010 to about 2013 of ports on PC being definitively better than their console equivalents. And people forget that that was actually just a short period. Think of that. Like about 2010-ish, maybe 2009 to 2013. That's pretty much that period. That was the heyday of PC gaming. And it's like that. But that also happened when, like, that's kind of when YouTube really blew up for games, that kind of period as well, right? And it's like maybe a little bit before that, again, maybe about that 2008 period, but generally 2010, 2013, that's when gaming as a whole became so popularized to, like, how it is today. That's when it kind of formed from that mid-2000s period to what it is today. So this weird expectation, and I'm calling it weird from like a societal standpoint, not from a consumer standpoint. From a consumer standpoint, you want PC ports to be good. But from a societal standpoint, like, we aren't that far removed from PC ports being terrible. Like, it's weird that people are acting shocked now, especially with a new console generation. People have to remember that with the PS3 360, those consoles were already a couple of years into the life cycle before PC ports started being good. If you think back to stuff like there's these stupid Square Enix games. Dark Souls 1 is a fantastic example. It took a while for them to figure out how to make PC ports of console games good. The 360 isn't that different from a PC, just in the way that a PS4 and Xbox One aren't that different from a PC. That's just like, I just want to set people's I just want to say that to set people's expectations where I think they should be. Now, the follow up to that is, obviously, we did go through that period, but it's now 2015, and the expectations are that high. The developers can't stand there and go, yeah, but the PC ports used to be bad. That's not an acceptable excuse. PC ports are supposed to be good. People are supposed to be able to buy games that aren't broken. That change was for the positive and sliding back in the other direction. Even though there's precedents for, like, new into console generation PC gaming being shit, like PC ports being shit, even though there's precedents for that, and that's the history of video games, we can't afford to have that today. And that's what Steam, that refund system on Steam, is kind of underlining. It's kind of letting being in the face of developers and going, hey, like, I know there's reasons why you're shit. Well, they're not shit, but there's reasons why you done fucked up. But it's not acceptable. And that's kind of rich. That's like a really massive thing for video games. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So Thurible, then you're right. Like if you remember back again to start of PS3 360 era, Red Dead Redemption, fantastic example of one of the greatest games ever made by popular opinion, even though I personally didn't like it because of how it controlled. I didn't like the way it controlled. And no one can sit there and say it controlled well. No one can say that game controlled well. Fuck you guys. That game controlled like ass. Holy shit. Just like fucking GTA 4 did. Controlled like shit. Dog shit. But whatever. That game never came to PC and still hasn't come to PC. Full stop. And there's a reason for that. Because you're right, Thurbleton. At some point, developers have to stand there and go, can we afford to make a good PC port if this is what's going to happen to PC ports that come out broken? I don't know. Where do you guys think – do you think – which of those unlikely futures, those scary futures, like no PC ports or delayed PC ports? Like back in the day, remember, PC ports used to come out like a year after the console game because of this problem. Like Mitch, you said, like, why don't you just wait a couple weeks to put out your game? It might not be a couple weeks. It might be a couple months. What do you guys think about that?
I feel like because you're allowed to refund it, I think it's going to give developers more of an incentive, hopefully, to not ship broken-ass games and to push it back in the hope that the quality would be higher. I mean, that's, I think, the least bleak out of all of the futures is that kind of commitment to like making them something good, but then you end up with a GTA 5 situation where it takes a year and a half for the fucking game to come out to PC. Yeah. But I mean, it worked for the most part from what I've heard by and large. So it worked at least, which is
it's kind of scary because it worked in a bad way as well, because a lot of people bought that game twice, which is kind of encouragement in the wrong direction for those people. Doubleton?
I was going to say, like, it works okay other than, like, the really long release time. One other option that might end up happening, and this is, like, this is anybody's guess, just especially with, like, with the bigger AAAs, I don't think it's going to happen, but for this new burgeoning tier of, like, indie developers that have, like, moderate-sized teams, like, you know, 20 and whatnot, is like the Unities and the like Unreal and I guess Cry Engine is that's the thing, right?
Yeah, Cry Engine is the thing.
Yeah, those are like building off those systems will, I assume, hopefully make it easier to develop for PC as well as for like on the Frostbite. Consoles. Yeah.
Like if most things are off Frostbite, Frostbite's a proven engine to run the working console. Look at that fucking Star Wars thing. That looks spectacular. Like, hopefully, it'll bleed both ways into PC, right?
Yeah. That's an option, but like for Square Enix, I don't imagine them doing that. I imagine them working on their own tech.
Yeah, they do. They do. They do work on their own tech.
And like that's when we get the issues of stuff like the Batmans.
Exactly. Like Warner, and again, like. It's weird because the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One version of that game are solid. Like, sure, they're 30 frames per second, but they're a solid 30 frames per second. They work really well. People are really happy with those releases. It's not like the developer wasn't able to ship a non-broken game. Like, PlayStation 4 owners are really happy with their Batmans. But like in a world where a developer can only afford to really put that much effort into their highest selling platforms, which is console again. It's kind of weird. It could end up going either way. I honestly hope that we don't see games only being made for the consoles, because that again, that 2010 to 2013 period where you can make current gen games back then look spectacular by running them on PC is a pretty great way to roll. And VR is going to be like a whole nother layer of this.
Well, I mean, like, and that is if it makes money.
Yeah, if it makes money.
If VR makes money. Do you think... I had thought, now I'm losing it. I lost it.
All right, cool.
We'll hold again.
But yeah, like, so that's that. So yeah, those are the potential features. Hey, maybe developers will learn from this and do better. Or maybe we'll go into Dark Pro.
Do you think we're going to go back to just like 3 month delay?
I'm nodding my head. I think that at some point, in any game's development, there's like a fucking meeting in a big room with a long conference table with like business people on one end and like developers on the other side, and they go, "This is what we can afford to do. What can we do?" It's gonna tip in the favor of consoles, especially with like PS4 having 20 million install base, and like, well, console games is back to being the biggest dog, right? Especially every new console generation happens, console becomes the big dog every time. So it's gonna get to the point where they're gonna look at this and go, "Wow, look at how much money Warner Brothers lost on that game by shipping it broken." Especially now that Steam has refunds, and it's gonna go back to, "Okay, then we'll just wait on the PC version," because that's been proven to work. Like Mitch said, Grand Theft Auto 4, they waited on it; it was fine.
Well, they still sold the shit. And also something else to consider is that like there are corporate interests vying for the Sony and like the PS4 and the Xbox to like come out early, come out working. Yeah. Like yeah. That Sony does some like, "Hey, we'll joint fund this," like, you know.
Yeah. The co-marketed or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Valve is the closest thing to like a source of that being on PC, and Valve doesn't really give a crap. They yeah. are over inundated with games, and so I imagine we'll just start seeing stuff come out late.
Yeah, that's my stance as well. In some cases, like, it's getting pretty obvious now, stuff like Destiny just will not come to PC. For better or worse, like, I'm not going to say Destiny's a good game. I'm just saying.
No PC.
Never came to PC. No PC version. Sad. That's that. Anything else to say about that topic? Like, none of us played Batman, so there's not much more we can necessarily say, but.
No, I think that's it.
Wait and see. It's sad that like we had a week of, "Oh my god, how amazing are video games," to a week directly after of like, "Oh, but there's still a lot wrong with video games. I don't know."
Yeah. And then I guess the other thing that I want to get like some impressions on, because it's something we've seen happening for some time now, and this isn't really like a major like, you know, turn of the tide, but the game Tale of Tales. Trying to figure out who the developer of that is. They've made a couple other games, but this is one that was a Kickstarter, and they expected to make a lot of money after their Kickstarter. Are you guys familiar with Tale of Tales?
I'm not familiar with this at all. I'm looking it up now. So what is Tale of Tales?
Tale of Tales is, I think...
It looks pretty sharp. Looking at the images of it now. It looks like nice.
Thank you, Company of Heroes, Tales of Valor. You're not helping. it's one where I think you're just like a maid cleaning an apartment in the midst of like a crisis happening in a city, and it's kind of like a kind of Gone Home, kind of indie. It's a story exploration game.
As a magical deer, you join many others. And what the fuck is this? What is this video game?
Maybe I have the wrong game.
I'm looking at Tale of Tales, the website, and apparently there's like. There's a lot to this game aside from how it opens, because it's like...
I'm thinking of the Sunset game.
Oh, no. Maybe these are just different games with the same developer? Oh, yeah. Benelete. Yeah, okay. These are just different. Thank God. All right. I was mistaken.
We probably should have done our notes on this.
Yeah, we probably had notes. I just like that certain surprise of just seeing Magical Deer. I apologize. They have other games. This is just one of them. Okay. So what happened, sorry?
Game company Tale of Tales. Yeah. Their latest game... Sunset.
Okay, yes. So you're talking about Sunset specifically.
Yes. Well, I mean, like, okay, yeah, this is their latest game, which it looks really nice.
Yeah,
but they didn't, like, most of their first month's release, like, you know, like, "Hey, we've shipped this many units," came from just sending out the copies to the Kickstarter backers. Like, they, for getting a lot of news talk, or like the news sites and whatnot, it's kind of the realization that, like, hey, if you make a fancy art game that is great for telling a unique story that like opposed to the generic stuff we see from like the AAA stuff, AAA games, And yeah, even if it's talked a lot about on the video game sites, it doesn't filter down to, like, that's the top of the pyramid and the masses of gamers that most people making a game, they're a business, they're trying to make money, don't hear about it or don't care about it because, various reasons, too many to name. This all went back to Tale of Tales, the company, saying, like, hey, we're just not making games like this anymore because we're not, like, we're losing money on it. We're not making money. It's not a good business decision.
Yeah.
And this raises a lot of questions in regards to the idea of Kickstarter, the idea of, like, look at a company like Ubisoft, big AAA. They make a fair amount of their money just from being based in Montreal, in Canada, and getting grants from the government to basically say, make art, make entertainment products. And, like, that, or the idea of big publishers, just, like, basically I want to raise the question to you guys, like, the idea of how games make money. Like, how publishers or how developers get money to make games and then turn that around in profit. Should they turn around a profit? This goes back to the whole games as art thing.
Yeah.
Cynic talk, because I can't talk.
I have a definitive stance on this, but Mitch, before I have my inevitable monologue.
The calm before the storm, so to speak. So how games should make money. I think that's kind of an interesting thing, because, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to make money to live.
Yes.
And so as an artist or as somebody who's working on a video game, they need to have some sort of financial compensation for the work that they are doing. So I don't think it's wrong for people to, like, per se charge for a video game. I mean, I think it's interesting that this kind of conversation is happening on the heels of, like, the whole Sony with Shenmue 3. Like, everybody crowdfund it. Oh, and then once they kind of hit, like, almost like a stretch goal, it was like Sony realized there was enough interest in it. And so they're like, all right, we'll actually invest some of our money into this as well. Yeah. Which I think is an interesting and kind of shitty way to do things. Because, I mean, pre-ordering a game now is essentially the same thing as kickstarting it in a lot of senses. And so there's people that have kickstarted Shenmue and then will probably pre-order Shenmue and then probably buy Shenmue.
Yeah.
So they're giving Sony money, like, on three different levels.
Yeah.
And so that kind of feels shitty. But then at the same time, you're like, where does the line, like Thurbleton brought up, it's like, where's the line? Was like, well, if it's art, then should it be grants and stuff like that, like with Ubisoft? Or,
well, and then this goes back to the whole thing of, like, the idea of, is, like, entertainment and art are kind of the same thing, but they're also kind of not. So, like, yeah, if you want to tell a story, but you also got to make money to eat and to survive and to live. Mm-hmm. What happens when the story you want to tell has to be changed in order to make money so you can eat and live?
Right.
That is it. Go ahead.
Oh, God. All right. I'm...
Unleash the gates.
I... Just make fucking good games, you guys. God damn it. Like, seriously. Like, fucking...
Fair point.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Like, all right. So... I just spent half this episode talking about fucking Bird Story and a game where you're watching videos of a single actress talking.
It's true.
That's it.
These are weird, like, weird games.
Weird games that are very successful for their people, right? It's like, I don't think games are big enough for the aspiration that the gaming community is starting to, like, give them. Like, this is another one of those gaming society things, right? Where another perfect example of this is, like, and I don't want to unpack this too much, but inclusivity in games, right? One of the first things you hear when any game is announced nowadays in 2015 is, so can you, like, cross-dress in this game? or like, oh, can you play as a woman in this game? Yeah, like that's an expectation now. Like you should be able to play a woman in Fallout. Right, well, Fallout is like one of those things where it's a history, but like that's the kind of conversation you're having every time a game is released, or like even we're victims of it. Like when we talked about Horizon, it's like, hey, isn't it great that it's a female protagonist? That's pretty cool. But that is like one of those things where gaming is kind of like one of the newest forms of art that humanity has invented. But because it's so new, it has a very young, very progressive fan base. And that young, progressive fan base, by definition, because they're young, are very idealistic. That one of the curses of youth is believing anything's possible. Believing you're invincible, believing the world works how you want it to work. That's not how the world works. That's not how like anything happens. Change in any circumstance is a slow, progressive thing. Gaming is what, like 30 years old? And only now, like 2015, it's more than 30 years old, but roughly, let's just say 30 years old. Now in 2015 is when we're finally starting to see big budget games with female protagonists. That's how long it fucking took. That's how long it goddamn took. Like if you actually think about it, that's how long it goddamn took.
I mean, like, if you want to go into, like, grand scope of things, how long has the idea of getting paid to entertain been around?
Since the start of time, right?
No.
But, if it's totally
maybe, like, the past, like, maybe 100, like a couple hundred years?
I'm including prostitution and plays.
I'm not. Plays, okay. Yes.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But you're right. Like, a lot of times, like, painters, great painters of the past were slaves. Or equivalent, like essentially slaves, a little bit above a serf.
Like indentured servants, more or less.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then something else to consider is, like, you actually point this out, just with the idea of Bird Story. And, like, the Thomas Was Alone kind of thing of, like, anybody doesn't know that, Flappy Bird, for example. The idea that, like, some games come out and they are, like, completely missed by, like, everyone and then won't get noticed for maybe a couple like months, maybe like a year or something. And then if they get noticed, like just because your game is good, it does not translate to money.
Yeah, it doesn't. It because, and that's if your game is good, right?
Yes.
And so like,
and there are plenty of games that are crap that somehow get money. Like this Batman one. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
It's like one of those things where people want a world of gaming. And I know I'm on a soapbox here, but fuck it. If people want a world where any kind of game sells magically, like this is like people are so like I've heard this on the internet millions of times, like a statement like I'm so happy this exists. I probably won't buy it, but I'm so happy this exists. This is a perfect example is that game that Media Molecule is making, Dreams, right?
Yeah.
That game is probably not going to sell like fuck all. I'm happy it exists. I'm not going to buy it. That's a perfect example of it right there, where like the aspirations for gaming are like what we want video games to be, the types of video games we want to exist. No one wants to stand there and go, hey, you developers, this is the kind of game you need to make to sell games, because we don't want to be that guy. We don't want to be the Captain Obvious. We don't want to be the evil dude in a suit in the background saying, well, statistically, this is what sells. So that might be what you want to make money. It's like one of those things where we want to be in a world where a game like you, hey, this is like a post-war, like modern day war era, and you're a cleaner who's working in some dude's apartment 1 hour every day. That's what this game was, Sunset. I don't want to play that. I'm sure there are people out there who exist who want to play that, but I'm not one of them. And I'm not alone in being a person who doesn't want to play that game. So it's like, we want a game where games like that will, a world where games like that will be successful, but I don't think gaming is big enough as a medium. I don't think gaming is progressive enough as a medium in terms of the population base it has to be able to support games like that. Our ideals of what gaming is not matching up with reality, and that's being proven time and time and time again. And it seems that every time that is proven, people are shocked that it's been proven, and that continues to annoy me to no end. That's what I had to say. So fair. So my answer to this is, hey, make a good game that you think people actually want to play. Not the game, not the passion project. I know you want to make the passion project that speaks to your heart.
Or be like, make the passion project, but don't bet the farm on it.
Yeah, don't rely on it. Don't expect it to be sold. Like sometimes it will. Like sometimes you're like Dust in Elysian Tale. Fantastic example. Game that was a passion project. Everyone told him, hey, maybe you don't want fucking furries in your game. They look weird. And everyone was like, he's just like, fuck it. No, that's my vision. That's my heart. I'm going to put my whole life into this game. He made it and it found an audience. That's an example of a good thing. There's probably a million Dust and Legion Tales out there that didn't find an audience. And those people like burned, right? It's possible, but it's not something you should bet the farm on. And that's because gaming just isn't there yet. Gaming isn't to the point where every game allows you to play a LGBT character.
Well, and also, like, this is something that people said, like, the Sunset game, sort of like, that's one of the reasons why they had trouble, was because games like it had come before. Like, because we'd already had Gone Home, this didn't spark as bright, like, this didn't shine as brightly, because they're like, oh, yeah, it's another Gone Home.
Hmm. Maybe, yeah, that could be very well part of it. I haven't played this game, so I'm not really trying to be a general.
Well, I'm not sure. I guess it's not a carbon copy of Gone Home, but like, yeah.
But like the walking, interacting with things simulator.
Yes.
Has been done before. Yeah. But there's the thing, right? Because like God, and that's where it comes down to like my statement at the start, like, hey, make a good game. There's a difference between a good game and a game like Gone Home. Gone Home was an excellent game. And that's kind of like a distinction I need to make as well when I say that. Like, I sound really mean, and I am trying to be mean when I say, hey, just make a fucking good game. It's because, like, the bar of entertainment nowadays is so fucking high. Like, if I'm not playing a game, I'm reading a really good book, or I'm watching an excellent TV series, or an amazing movie. There's so much entertainment out there that it is not difficult to keep yourself entertained with quality stuff. So not only does the game have to be good, to actually sell, and I beg anyone out there to prove me wrong with this, to sell in 2015, your game has to be excellent. And the reason I say that is I want someone to be able to point out to me a game that is excellent that did not sell.
But then also it has to be excellent and noticed.
Yeah, it has to be excellent and noticed. Well, I think...
But you can't be like in cahoots with the writer, because then it's breaking games journalism.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, you can't promote an indie game if you've had a beer with the guy because games journalism. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. It's one of those things where it continually comes up over and over and over again, and it's, as I said earlier, like, it just continues to shock me how many people act shocked. So for like an excellent example is the controversy, inverted commas, over people commenting about the dude in Fallout being able to dress like a woman. Why is that even a thing? It's an example. I'll let people out there look into it for themselves. But it's an example out there of how gaming is just like this weird thing, probably that's made even weirder by how young its audience is in a lot of cases. And I'm only 26, so I don't want to sound like, hey, I'm not talking about myself. I've clearly proven with my hate of Nintendo that I can be irrational about things.
And
Pacific Rim. I can definitely be irrational, but like... Yeah, that's just
how... What are your thoughts on Irrational?
Irrational games?
Yeah.
I think... And this is...
That was the joke. Just keep going.
No, I think this is a great example of it. I think Irrational is cooler when they're making Bioshock games.
Thank you. Yes.
And I know that sounds terrible, but like, remember, a Bioshock game doesn't have to be Bioshock Infinite Bioshock Infinite 2. I mean,
just needs a man in a lighthouse.
Just needs a man in a lighthouse. Like, it just, like, it was a perfect opportunity for them to make any game they want to, as long as it's good. Because they allowed them to, they gave themselves a multiverse, man. They could do whatever the fuck they wanted. But they were like, oh, we don't want to make big games anymore. Like, to be fair, it's hard to make a big game. But there's a reason, like, fucking Naughty Dog is my favorite developer of all time. Miyamoto is one of the best game developers of all time. They make big games that aspire to greatness and achieve it. And that's what gaming really is. To me, in my heart, that's what gaming still is. Maybe one day it will be that world, like indie movies, where the people who like indie movies will be able to make indie movies and a lot of people will watch them, or enough people watch them to fund them. But gaming isn't as big as movies yet. Simple as that. So we still need your Titanics and your Godfathers to, like, you still need to be one of those to be a big budget, you know, proper game, for game ass game. So.
Sweet.
That's my stance. And hate me. Send hate mail.
Yeah, you know what? By all means, feel free to chime in at the Lincoln Cast on Twitter or the Lincoln Cast at gmail.com. Is it the Lincoln Cast at gmail.com?
Yep, the Lincoln Cast at gmail.com. If you strongly disagree with my sentiment.
As far as I can tell, that's the only, like, that's the two main news points. There's a couple of other things, but not sure how much talking time we get out of them. And we've already talked to death about VR, so.
This is our second podcast today. Like, we've
been going for a little bit.
We've been going for a while. Not that Mitch, we can't do six-hour shows.
Mitch, do you have any plugs?
I do, actually, and they're not League of Legends this time.
Yay!
This game called Payday.
Yeah, right. So the first one is a video. It's only 30 minutes long. It's called Kung Fury. It's on YouTube.
Has been plugged before, but definitely plug again.
Yeah, it is absolutely plug that again.
The greatest 30 minutes you will ever spend in your life ever, probably. And then I have two separate book recommendations. I don't know if I recommended the first one. All You Need Is Kill. It's the novel version of the movie Edge of Tomorrow, which I think is really – it was really good. I actually liked it better than the movie.
Damn, so, that's a big praise. I really like that movie.
The movie was really good.
Yeah.
But the book was just kind of even just as awesome.
Sick. All right. That's on my list immediately.
And then awesome. I also have been into this series. It's called Day by Day Armageddon by J.L. Bourne. It's a three-book series about, like, the zombie apocalypse. And it's from the perspective of a Air Force officer going through it in Texas. And so he kind of keeps, like, a daily journal. It's pretty good. So I would recommend both of those books and that video to whoever is interested.
Damn.
Cool. Yeah. Cynic?
Yeah.
I'm just furiously looking it up now. Give me a second. Freebirdgames.com. So for people who did play Gone Home, like, out there, like, so not Gone Home, To the Moon. So actually, like, smart people who play good games is what I'm saying. There is two little shorts that the maker of those games put out. Apparently they came out over, I think, the 2014 and 2013 holidays. They're like little shorts that are about 30 minutes long, and they're absolutely free, which feature, like, the two main characters, like the people who go back and change people's memories, those two dudes. And they're just like little holiday specials that are really cute and half an hour long. So check them out. They're free on his website. If you go to his freebirdgames.com and go to, I think, the blog section, he links them there. If you still have To the Moon installed on Steam, they should be actually sitting in your To the Moon folder, whether you've noticed it or not. They were free updates to the Steam version. So yeah, check them out. They're cute. If you haven't played them, fucking play To the Moon and Bird Story. They're just really nice.
Sweet.
Not for people who like gameplay. Like, if you go into games because gameplay is what you want, this isn't for you. It's about story.
I mean, this is like definitely a interactive novel kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you're still, like, moving the characters around and shit, but, like, 99% of those games is the music, really. Is the music and the dialogue. Thurbleton?
My plug is going to be, I don't know if anybody's noticed, I enjoy climbing rocks and talking about them. I haven't, like, done a lot of podcasts. I've done a lot of rock climbing while doing this podcast, I guess I should say. But neat thing happened the other day where you guys might be familiar. Google has on the Maps thing a street view option, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where they just get like a 360 degree, like a, I don't know how many degrees, all degrees camera and just, you know, record the street view. They've done that for a famous rock climbing route in Yosemite National Forest, beautiful looking national forest in California. There is a big cliff called El Capitan and a route called the Nose. They have Google Street Viewed this route.
Right.
That's legit.
To put this into perspective, for most people's, like the average first time climbing, for most people these days, I believe is a 5-day climb.
Wow. That's yes. Fucked. That's fact, fucked up.
I'm going to look up.
That sounds tiring.
See if I can find on the wiki. The nose for El Cap, vertical gain is just under 3,000 feet of climbing. Fuck. And you can see this from the lazy safety of your home on the computer, thanks to Google.
Nice.
It doesn't quite capture, like, you know, the whole sense of exposure and everything, but it's pretty great. It's pretty cool. So definitely look, check that out. That's all I'm going to say.
That's awesome.
I think that brings the end to this episode of Scotchcast.
Damn.
Cynic, Mitch, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Perrin
couldn't make it.
Have a good week, guys.
Yeah, my name is Mr. Thurbleton. Thanks for listening.